Hello, diamond beauties and interdimensional beings of light. It's Lisa here, your mystic guide, inviting you to come and take a ride with me as we journey through space and time. Our mission is to create conscious content for 1111D, sharing resources of light for the new reality. Welcome to the Buddhist Biohacker.
Buddhist Biohacker would like to thank our partners Block Therapy, Purity Coffee, Dry Farm Wines, Omnia, and 2-1 Photography. Information can be found on lisamgunshore.com. Join our forum at miwi.com/Buddhist Biohacker and watch live on YouTube on the Buddhist Biohacker channel.
Okay. All right. Looks like we're live. Welcome to Buddhist Biohacker Men's Edition, Volume 2. I'm Scott Gunshore, Lisa's wonderful husband. And we're going to talk today some more about divine masculinity. I'm going to touch on a book that I read many moons ago called Iron John, probably about 20 years ago, written by Robert Bly. It's a book about men. That's what it is. And some of the themes I'm going to talk about address masculinity in the modern age. So I'd like to start with a brief introduction of each of our members here. My name's Scott, and I'm 20-year plus aerospace and defense guy and drummer of 30 years. And I'm going to turn it over to Donnie.
How's it going? I'm Donnie Dust. I live in Lafayette, Colorado, and I am a Marine Corps veteran of 12 years. And ever since I left the military, I've been running a wilderness self-reliance school here in the great state of Colorado, just impacting young minds, old minds, shaping them, getting them more in touch with nature and building up the reliance in the outdoors.
Thanks, Donnie. Satyam.
And namaskar, everyone. Great to be here with everybody for round two of our session. My name is Satyam. I'm a yoga instructor. I came onto the path of yoga about 3 decades ago. Spent quite a bit of time living in India and ashram life and just really incorporating a lot of the yogic teachings into lifestyle and teaching them through a variety of mediums. And it's a pleasure to be here and contribute and participate with everyone. I'm not in the great Rocky Mountain state. I am sitting on just off the Chesapeake Bay in the state of Maryland.
Very cool. All right, and Ted.
My name is Ted. How are we doing tonight, guys? I was a therapist for 15 years, and I am a life coach now, specializing in teaching communication skills to men. And I'm happy to be here for our second round of this. Good to see y'all again.
All right. So if there's anyone live that has questions for us while we're talking, I'll certainly do my best to incorporate those into the discussion. I'm going to start to see where you guys are focused right now. So we talked about 30 plus days ago. Lots been going on. And I'm curious where you are at and what you've been focusing on since we last talked, whether it's physical, emotional, or spiritual, and what you're doing and how you've been addressing those things. So what's been on your mind in the last month or so? I'm going to start with Ted.
I'd tell you what, I've been dealing with all three of those things. I would say there's been a healthy combination of emotional, physical, and spiritual. I just went back to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu 2 weeks ago. That was a big deal for me. I now have more of a healthy outlet for everything that we are dealing with right now, and that has made a big difference. Primarily, I've been marketing my business or finding new ways to market my business. Things are a little bumpy right now, right, guys? I mean, we're sort of watching a crazy unfolding right now. I am generally in a good place, but you know, I am keeping an eye on my emotional health and my physical health as well. But generally speaking, things are pretty good.
Excellent. How about you? Ben? Yes, sir.
Oh yeah, right on. Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of teaching, so that has kind of allowed me to focus more on my my physical health as well as my emotional health. Because as I teach, I separate myself from my my two sons, so I have to find that balance of being able to provide through one means, which is the physical means of providing for them and creating income, as well as, you know, separating myself from them, but also connecting with them and maintaining that sort of connection and you know, overcoming different hurdles. So it's been a good month. Definitely have enjoyed my opportunities and experiences, and have enjoyed my my experiences with my two sons, as well as everyone that I've come across through social media or in face teachings, from young kids to people much older. It's been a great, rewarding sort of experience. So it's been a good balance. Absolutely.
Have you done some traveling? I thought you had mentioned you were.
Yeah. Traveling. So majority of September, I was on the road, and I was just teaching a lot of different folks, everything from some of the ancient primitive skills, as far as, you know, flint knapping, and just really building up a reliance in the outdoors for, you know, a single mother with two sons to a police officer, his family, and just kind of taking that time to kind of understand who they are, what they needed to do. And that was about 2.5 weeks altogether of just one-on-one kind of coaching, mentoring, leading, and giving them some great skills, great knowledge, and reinforcing some of their own personal abilities to maintain their wilderness self-reliance.
Cool. Right on. Satyam, how about you?
Yeah, it's been a good month of transitioning from the one of the hotter, humid summers that we've had into a nice, calm, steady fall. So that's been a welcome transition. Generally speaking, my life is going good. It's you always try and keep balance. How balanced? It's being the individual. It's hard to know how balanced one is. Sometimes you know that when you come into a state of challenge or something. But it's been a pretty smooth ride. I try and address physical, psychic, spiritual, emotional on every day with through meditation or through physical postures or through writing work that I do. So I try and keep a healthy balance, but you know, the person involved can't always be the one who's saying whether they're really imbalanced or not, but you try your best, you know. But I try and separate meditation time from computer time to active time on the mat. And I've been teaching 6 days a week or so, which has been good. It keeps me active with that. And I'd say it's been a good transition, and I got to do a little bit of nature stuff. I used to be an outdoor educator up in the North Cascades, Washington, Canada, and I don't get out much these days, but I did go out pawpaw picking the other day in someone's little wilderness backyard, and I didn't learn about pawpaws till a year or two ago, but they are some special, if you can, they're really temperamental. They're only ripe for a little while. But it's like the closest thing you'll get to a tropical fruit in North America that's native. And it's got full of seeds, but they're great. They're really wonderful. So if you have pawpaws in your area, I highly recommend go out and pick a few.
Well, that's cool. I think I saw your post on that.
Yeah. Not too long ago. Yeah.
Cool. So for me, work's been busy, and Lisa and I managed to get out. We hiked Eklis Pass, which I think is near a 14er. Man, that was a heck of a hike for us. We, you know, everyone being indoors a lot more than maybe normal, especially out in Colorado, took more out of us than we thought. So there was some recovery involved there, but it was good time. My big reveal is spiritually, I started praying again, and haven't done that in a long time. I hate to admit it, but maybe I haven't done it to the degree that I've started. So I thought that was interesting, just with all the intensity of everything going on and some information that, you know, maybe was intense or things I hadn't been expecting to impact me, led me back to that place. So I thought it was really interesting, and, you know, we'll see where that goes, because I think it's an important part of everyone's life is to have that kind of communication with whatever that power is that you need to tap into. So leading from there, I'm curious, you know, from a spiritual aspect, how would you define the word warrior? What does it mean to you? What do you view as the positive aspects? What is it important that you control if you're behaving in a warrior capacity? I'll start with Donnie.
Yeah. So I think, simply put, a warrior does not lead by fear or any sort of aggression in the sense of like exerting a certain amount of power or control. They really lead by love and security. And I say this for someone who's been overseas serving in a combat zone. The impact of a lot of the people there was pretty tremendous, but we built more relationships through love, by creating security, and not through fear tactics, not by exerting control. And everybody that was on the ground there was a warrior. And you live to fight, and you train to fight. That is your job. But more importantly, as a human being, you are a warrior. And when you can separate what is chaos, what is the trauma of war, into the humanity, as far as giving love, providing security, giving relief, giving support to the people, you are the purest and truest definition of a warrior. You do not use a position of power as an aspect of hierarchy. Just because you are here doesn't mean that everyone who is maybe in a chain of command or in a certain civilian population is less than you or beneath you. You actually have more responsibilities as a warrior. You have to truly lead by example, providing that love, providing that security. And for somebody who's, you know, who's done this overseas, my exact job was to relate to the human population. And the easiest way to relate to those people is through that commonality, which is love, compassion, and caring. And that was the easiest way to define yourself or to become a true warrior.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
How about you, Satya?
Sure. Good question. And I appreciate what Donnie shared.
No worries.
Yeah, warrior is a term that's used quite a bit in yogic spirituality. And it comes into play. The Sanskrit word vir, V-I-I-R-A, means courage or warrior. Some of those who yoga practitioners who practice warrior pose, it's Virabhadrasana 2, Virabhadrasana 1, Virabhadrasana 3. Now, those are physical postures. So then what is courage, or what is that sense of fearlessness that it takes to be a warrior? And part of the spiritual approach in yoga is overcoming one's fear, to achieve a state of fearlessness. And fear kind of saps you of your energy. It saps you of your courage. And in the social sphere, using that spiritual awakening or courage or inspiration, then it's the courage to do what's right, regardless of who's on your side or not on your side. You're there to do justice, to do what's right, and to present that view regardless of whatever the backlash you might face, and to not be worried about your close relationship. Of course, we're concerned about one and all, but that sense of willing to stand forward and help others on the path of welfare. And I think that's really needed, you know. So often we get swayed by popularity or public opinion, but if you really delve into the essence of a situation, you get a nugget of kernel of truth of what's going to be really bring for the spirit of welfare and empowerment, not for self-interest, not for self-aggrandizement, but truly to help one and all progress, even if it goes against some other party's private interest. But you have to stand tall in the face of that. And that allows, it paves the road for others to also walk down that path. It clears the brush out of the way. And to me, that's a big part of being a warrior and being fearless of opening up the pathway wide for others to also move ahead.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that.
My dog's going to join us every once in a while.
Welcome.
Now room for one more. Ted, how about you?
I believe being a warrior is it's being your best self. Developing the parts of you that you want represented out in the world. For me, that was a lot of physical, just working out and activity, just because that helps me concentrate. Back when I was a therapist, I really approached therapy as if it was an art rather than a psychological science. So for me, it was very much getting better at my art day in, day out, perfecting it so I could help the people that were on my caseload and so I could get them to go to a better place. So the constant self-improvement that comes with that, I really got into that that imagery and that methodology. I mean, it's a daily thing, but you know, I'm 51 now, but I still look forward to doing it, whether it's working out, whether it's reading about different ways to treat people, different ways to handle situations. I really love the constant improvement. That very much is my thing. That was a great question, by the way, Scott.
Thank you. Yeah, when the word warrior is mentioned, it's often associated with power. It's mm-hmm. often associated with domination. Could be associated with violence in some cases.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember, you know, the warriors, you know, ancient warriors spent as much time honing themselves mentally, you know, as much as physically, honing themselves as much spiritually. And there's so many aspects of your life to behave in that capacity. Could be at work in a career. It could be hiking and trying to overcome a physical obstacle. Could be just interacting with a person that presents a challenge to your inner growth. And to me, that word it's opportunity, represents opportunity for us to be better. I like Satyam, you said to clear the brush, right? To make a path for others. It's very important. And what I heard in all the answers, so it's gratifying to hear that you oftentimes placing others ahead of you or above you in order to accomplish something, in order to be more human.
I think something to add to, you know, being a warrior is typically people try to define a warrior have never been a warrior themselves. So there's an assumption it is the barbaric, the chaotic, the aggressor, all those things. And I would probably say that for those that have been in that warrior's position, and we all have, we kind of know the truth and authenticity of what it actually means, that self-sacrifice, putting others in front of you, clearing the brush. So it's almost, you know, to understand the way the warrior walks, you have to live by the true examples of what it is and not make the assumptions of what popular culture might think it is or what you've seen in, you know, in history's past, because there's plenty of examples of what a warrior is, and it comes from all walks of life. And he's a warrior. But it's one
making
of the
weapons.
You know, there he is.
It's good to go. He likes to move.
So as warriors day to day, we all get wounded, right? Yeah. We all suffer wounds, behaving in a warrior capacity. How do you manage? How do you take care of your wounds? And how have you managed maybe a very deep wound that you've experienced in your life, right? All four of us probably have many wounds that we've carried with us and still do. And there could be all very different. Ted, I'm going to start with you.
Let's see. The way... Typically, when I want to leave the office behind, it will be through some kind of working out. And I had to learn this over time. The worst thing I ever did was go 15 months with no vacation when I was a therapist. Everybody can tell. So I learned you really do have to take care of yourself if you are putting in those hours with other people. You know, for me, it was you're really swimming around in other people's emotional trash, which, you know, it piles up day by day, just like real trash. And you have to find a way to process that and get it out of your system so it doesn't wind up poisoning you. One of the hardest things I ever had to deal with was, it happened twice when I was at two different agencies. We had two different clients commit suicide. They were not my clients, but I was very close to the people who were working with them. And it was really devastating to the entire team because it was unexpected. When that happens, you've really got to watch how you handle yourself and what your reactions are. And you may even want to check in with a partner and say, hey, look, am I okay right now? Or are things starting to bubble up? So, I mean, taking a self-inventory on a regular basis has been really, really important to me, just because you never know when that one thing is going to sneak up on you and bite you. It could bite you at a very inopportune time. So being aware of how you feel, what you're thinking, and why you're doing it, that became really, really important to me. And they try to train therapists in self-care, but they don't really make you do it. It's still left up to you. So you do have to take the initiative and make sure that your head is right and your heart's right. Otherwise, you know, you will get overwhelmed. There's always going to be more of them than there are of you. So yeah, self-care is a big priority.
Well, how do you
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit, Scott.
Am I all clear now?
Yeah.
Okay. I assume you take on a lot of that energy psychically, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of pain.
Yeah.
How do you clear that? What do you do to manage through that, through taking on all of that?
For me, doing physical things that give me a massive endorphin dump, that works for me. Jiu-jitsu is one. I used to do mixed martial arts. On top of all that, I still work out on my own. So I physically have to burn that energy off, so to speak. I also make sure I'm not reading about work after work hours. My boundaries have to be very, very tight. Now, as far as how to sweep all that stuff out, I meditate as well. But I really, you know, when you got to just tap out and maybe take a break, that is also extremely important, just to pull yourself out of everything that is going on around you. Frequent breaks are a good thing, in my opinion. But I mean, that's how I handled it.
Gotcha. Donnie, how about you?
Yeah, when those kind of scars or wounds surface, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, my place, my church, so to speak, is the woods. That's where I go. That's where I connect. I relax. I can center myself. I can ground myself. And it goes beyond going for a walk. It goes beyond just spending an hour or two. It's a full immersion into that environment, becoming part of that pattern of life that exists in that wild place. It's, you know, swimming in the rivers, lighting a fire, sitting in a cave. It's really just kind of eliminating all of the things we might need and really identifying what that wound is and working on it, mentally working on it, saying, all right, what is it? What is the problem that's being presented to me? What am I suffering from? And then taking the steps to, you know, work through it. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that my response, I think I said this last time, my response is the easiest thing to control. And since I can't control that, I have gained so much power over whatever that issue could be, even if it is something physical, whether it's a broken bone or something internal, I've gained control over that. Because I believe when it comes to something like fear or the fear that comes from, you know, a trauma or a wound or something in that sense, the fear is really a projection into the future. It hasn't happened yet. So we have a tendency to fear the unknown and we project the unknown consequences. So let's say if I'm in a relationship and I fear that there could be some sort of problem, maybe it's through an altercation or a miscommunication, I'm only projecting what I think can happen, but it's not reality. My mind is starting to take control of that when it's not even true. It's just a projection. Once I acknowledge that projection, and that's all it simply is, I've already overcome that fear, I've already overcome that trauma. But it's the mental component of it, as well as the physical connection to the mud, the dirt, the leaves, the trees, the waters. That's what just gives me a whole set of rejuvenation. It's almost like my battery is run low and I need that electrical charge to kind of get me going again. And the wild places do that.
Now, do you find that in the process of doing this, do you hone in on what the wound is or where you need the rejuvenation? Or is it more of a broader, you go out there and it cures what ails you at the time?
Sure. So I group mental, physical, and emotional as one category or one kind of title, if you will. And that's my primal. That's my primal connection. That's my primal ability. All of my primal abilities go within that kind of scope, if you will. So for me, acknowledging it in the macro as well into the micro, it gives me kind of a complete circle. And since they all fall within my primal construct of understanding, you know, once we remove everything we have around us, we are just very simple beings. We are just, you know, hairless monkeys, so to speak, walking on this planet. So a lot of the superficial things that exist cause those problems. And once I've eliminated all of those things, my primal connection is in line. My primal kind of clarity is focused once again, whether it's a large topic or a small topic, it just kind of falls within that primal landscape. So it requires me to really focus on all three, but really kind of honing in on maybe one specific area.
Cool.
Yeah.
Satyam, how about you?
Yeah, good question. Generally, in terms of for me, for release, I would say, or as a point of recovery, that it's both internal and external. Internal would be some type of, in yoga we call it kirtan, chanting a very benevolent chant, and then meditation, and that just goes. It's like just clearing out the entire psycho spiritual domain, just going all the way inside and letting you know. But sometimes that's the mind is elusive, and so meditation is not always so easy, but the effort involved usually has a good payback for it. And of course, you don't do the meditation for the result; you do the meditation for the process. But it does help. It helps quite a bit. And then the external approach, the yogic doctrine is that if is to serve others. That serve others helps you in own rejuvenation. But again, you're trying to, you, the aim is to do it selflessly. And, but that's a tremendous boon for clearing the mind, because most of our pain comes from when we focus on our own selves, on what we feel maybe are inadequacies. Physical pain is a little bit more palpable. You know, if you stub your toe, like I did the other day, and I kind of made a joke on it on Instagram, this is my big bruise that I got in the fight of Dharma, of trying to do something good in this world. The yogis say that the Dharmic fight is primarily psychic, you know, spreading good ideas. But those physical things, unless you've really got a serious, serious injury, there's a certain direction for healing on the physical sphere. Psychically and spiritually becomes a little bit more tricky, especially psychically and emotionally. We can get so, it becomes, can be so complex. But I find that meditation as an internal vehicle, it puts things in perspective. And then you're helping others physically, psychically, socially, intellectually, then that helps. Then both that dual approach is very meaningful. If I can do both of those every day, which I aim to, then it usually keeps me pretty grounded.
So I'll add a comment. For me, often identifying the wound, being aware that you even have it, sometimes is the greatest challenge.
Yeah.
You might be hurt in some way, and it could be years before you even know that you were wounded. And when it happened and what it was. That to me has been one of the biggest challenges to healing, to moving through something is being able to understand or identify when it even happened and what happened. You might think that it's something with a past interaction, and then you come to find out, oh no, actually it was many years before that that led to something else that maybe caused more pain. So unraveling all that has been a big journey for me, and very enlightening. It helps in the unraveling to let go of some things that you didn't know you were carrying for so long, and you get to put it down finally. It's an important thing to me, and I'm sure you guys can relate in some way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a big point. I think a lot of that happens in the earlier years in life, call it 0 to 20 or so, where you kind of come out of that chute and you realize, you know, where you may not have been all that self-aware of what difficulties there were, because as children as we go through that development stage, we're so impressionable. You know, someone may say things, someone who respect, an elder may say things or different. I very much appreciate what what you're saying, that because in those years, it may not be very easily identifiable to the person. They just think it's life. They don't realize that they caught an arrow without realizing it, you know?
Yeah. So if we're talking about warriors, we're talking about becoming wounded or being wounded while you're trying to be a warrior day to day. Part of being wounded or being hurt can be grief, dealing with grief, being aware that you're grieving. How do you manage grief? What do you find helps heal? What do you recommend people consider in order to move through grief? I'll start with Ted.
I am not very good at that. And historically, other people have had to come up to me and say, hey, do you want to talk about that one thing? And, you know, through that, I have been able to express grief. I don't think I have a tendency to just not stop, and it's very much on to the next one, which is not terribly healthy, you know, and I know that now. But handling grief the way I do it, when I can actually acknowledge that I have it, when I've noticed it, I tend to talk it out. And just, you know, background as a therapist, we're always talking to each other, either to a coworker or to a partner. The way I express it is talking, but it takes me a lot before I'm actually aware of it. And I will admit that is a large blind spot for me. It has been for a long time.
Okay. Donnie.
Yeah, as far as grief, how you go about dealing with it, or what I recommend, this is just my personal experience, if you will. Again, I'm a seeker of simplicity. And what that means for me is kind of returning to the outdoors and kind of stripping away whatever that grief is through time, through effort, through energy in the outdoors. You know, there's different fields of study. One of them is called forest bathing. Just being in a natural environment kind of rejuvenates and helps people deal with grief. And I know from a personal standpoint, suffering a heart attack at a young age, one of the things that I did was exactly that. For those that don't know, at the age of 37, I had a massive heart attack that almost ended my life, but it was the lifestyle that I lived before that kept me alive. It was healthy eating, a lot of exercise, a lot of outdoor activities. That lifestyle kept me alive through that heart attack. And I knew that lifestyle, with some minor tweaks, would also keep me alive in my days to come. So when it comes to that grief and, you know, laying in a hospital bed and seeing your two sons next to you, you know, you're almost gone for the most part. You know, that's a lot of grief. And I knew for me to heal properly, again, my primal healing, my primal connection, was to reconnect to the most simple thing in the planet, and that's just the natural environment. So it doesn't require a lot from a person. It just requires acceptance. But accept whatever it has to offer and learn from it, live within it, drink from her waters, harvest her food, kind of reset and recharge everything so you can kind of overcome whatever that ailment is, that grief is. And that's what I truly recommend to people. I talk to people all the time, whether it is people who have had heart-related issues or some sort of trauma in their life. Aside from professional help, you know, talking to a therapist, something into that capacity, that's one facet of maybe a healing process for them. But I definitely recommend people going outside, taking off your shoes, walking through the mud, going back to a time maybe when you were a kid and it was okay to do those things and life was just good, catching grasshoppers, walking through streams, just kind of experiencing the world. And that really kind of sets your mind to a point of clarity and a point of just, you know, simple movement forward. And for me, that was my personal thing. And that's what I definitely recommend to people to do.
How about you, Satya?
Sure. Yeah, I'd say early on in life, I would say that what I would do was bury it, you know, bury it in being quiet. And I don't mean this in a real positive way. I was a pretty shy kid, probably, by most standards, though I had friends, but generally speaking, the public sphere, I was pretty shy. And I think any trauma experienced as a child was pretty much, I'd say, suppressed. And as an adult, or really, I'd say You know, I really became involved in meditation at the age of 22, 23, and it really wasn't, I'll do meditation to balance everything else out. What I did was clear everything out, and I just followed the meditation path, and whatever, everything, anything else in life was going to be in accordance with that. And that was really, really helpful for me. It was extremely helpful. And meditation can be so many things to so many people. In the yogic sphere, it's like that there is something eternal that you can connect with, and that our minds can go beyond the unit self and experience something, some feeling of connection with a greater consciousness. And that makes everything going on in the relative sphere, which is perpetual change of gaining and losing, gaining money, losing money, gaining friendships, maybe losing friendships, or, you know, people coming, this world is, the yogis call it jagat. It's perpetual change and nothing lasts forever. It's this ultimately, you know, when it comes down to it, we're going to lose all our physical possessions, all our, you know, our, it's, and so, and that can bring tremendous amount of an anxiety. You know, what am I going to do when my parents are gone? What am I going to, what will happen with my children? What will happen to my children when I'm gone? And this perpetual state of, you know, it's like running on a treadmill that you can't keep up with because this world is ephemeral. And so being connected with some type of spiritual thing where you really have, and it's not just superimposed, but you feel like, well, that there was, that there is some type of a link, then that helps, you know, steer your compass through any type of grief, which inevitably comes. It's going to happen. But it's how we respond to it. You know, I've had a father who passed. I have a mother who's 91. Everyone has some type of, you know, elder personality in their life, or, you know, or just disappointments along the way. You know, not everything goes our way the whole way through. But if we get that really wide angle view, then it's not that it minimizes it, but it puts in a certain perspective that I think is healthy. And so that's how it's worked out for me. And it was definitely needed.
Now, I'll put this into perspective. I'm a terrible crier, awful. I try to cry and I have a hard time. I think it's part of, right, cultural. It's sign of the times. It's, you know, there's all sorts of environmental aspects to that, what we're surrounded by, stimulation, all these things. What I'm curious to know is your opinions on grieving when you were younger, right? Because I think the theme that I've heard now from all three is, right, like we learn how to do it. How do we help younger men, boys? I have a son who's 11. How do we help them grieve if they're in that situation where they should and need to in this environment? Any ideas? I'll let anyone jump in who has some thoughts.
I used to tell people, if you want to cry, cry. I had particularly men let it out. Otherwise, it literally will build up into your system until you explode. And I think if we can teach young boys, hey, it's okay to cry. You're just letting the crap out of your system. If we destigmatize it, so to speak, it could go a really long way as far as emotional health goes. I literally did not cry for years and years up until maybe about 48, 49. And what was that?
Is there a way to help that, facilitate it physiologically?
I'm actually trying to remember what eventually triggered me. I think it's kind of beat out of us when we're younger in a lot of ways. Physiologically, think of something sad until you start crying. But I mean, it shouldn't have to be that hard. It's an automatic response, and we tell kids it's okay to do it. You know what? It's just like peeing when you got to pee, you pee, right? Well, if you got to cry, cry. So if we just let them do it, we won't have to reprogram ourselves, as it were, to do it now. I mean, still, you know, conditions have to be just right for me to cry. I will not automatically open up simply because it was so foreign for me for a long, long time.
Yeah. Donnie, you got two boys. Do they know how to manage anger and grief?
They do. So I think when it comes to crying, it kind of comes a couple different ways for me personally. I believe there's a need to cry when you're supposed to cry. But I also believe that we use crying as kind of a scapegoat at certain times. There's no reason to cry, in my personal opinion. It is a physical response, but I also believe it's a way that shows people not how to handle their emotions. Not everything warrants tears. And unfortunately, we're raising a lot of kids these days where drop of a hat and there's tears. So I think crying is important, but at the right times. What we're not doing is building the resiliency into young kids. We're giving them the tools to ultimately throw tears out, throw emotions, throw tantrums, the whole nine yards, instead of giving them the necessary tools to overcome certain minor points of adversity. I'm not talking, you know, if they fall from a treehouse and snap their arm, tears aren't warranted, but there's certain things that warrant tears. And we have to keep that in mind, especially when it comes to masculinity, it comes to divine masculinity. There's certain things that as a young man, you should still be keeping in mind and still doing. And some of them is being courageous in the face of some sort of events. There will be times you'll be afraid, but does it warrant tears? And that's where I think we also need to look at this. Yes, crying is allowed. You can totally do it, but the right type of crying. When you're in some sort of form of pain, whether it is mental, physical, emotional, it warrants that. But we got to stop using it as a tool to not take that opportunity to build some resiliency into our kids. Because with my boys, I made a rule, same thing with my wife at the time, we would never hit our kids. You know, I'm a 6'2", 240-pound man. I hit an 8-year-old boy, I could snap his arm, I could do some serious damage. So it required my mind and my heart to work in unison to properly discipline them. And where there was a time to cry through pain, through injury or misunderstanding, those tears were warranted. But if it was through a form of frustration, you know, and we could overcome that, we would try to just not bring it to a point of tears, because you can't function like that in society. You know what I mean? Half the people we come across these days, if one little speed bump comes in their way, the entire day is ruined. It's tears. And half the lectures I give to people is on resiliency, building resiliency and overcoming their minor issues that don't warrant that kind of my life is over sort of response. And unfortunately, that's been the mindset in a lot of parents in dealing with their kids over the years. So I think when it comes to crying, you know, me personally, I need to let out a cry because I've, you know, taken a knife to my hand. I'm not going to cry. I know it's going to hurt, but doesn't warrant those tears. Now, if I lose a loved one, that's a different sort of emotional response. I want those tears. That is a release. And that's where, you know, I think it's important for parents to kind of coach their kids, mentor their kids, and enable their kids to identify the right times. Because it's not going to help in the future when every, you know, young man, young woman is just tears and trauma and the world is over because they got a bad grade or they didn't get a promotion. You know, we have to build in that resiliency, because that's really what we're lacking today, I find, in a lot of youth. And it might be a different perspective, but that's my personal opinion and how I go about.
Well, you bring up a good point, because when I originally was asking the question, I was thinking about the four of us and our generation, right? And what it was like for us. And you bring up a good point, which is that evolves over time. And so what maybe was a lot of closed off emotion and mindset of toughen up and suck it up and keep it in is shifting maybe to the other extreme, where it's like, let it all out all the time. And you bring up a good point, which, you know, that word resiliency.
Yes.
That's an important one, because there's an aspect of healing to crying, mm-hmm. but there's also an aspect of surrendering and quitting and victim, right? Being a victim. And so, yeah, you bring up a good point. I wasn't even thinking about, you know, how things maybe have changed quite a bit since when we were kids.
Complete shift. I mean, I just view how, you know, I grew up with a father, a mother, and two sisters, and I was the youngest. And it was, if you're hurt, you know, and it warrants those tears, that's a form to let my mother, my sisters, my father know I'm in severe pain. Something is extremely, you know, wrong. But if there's a tough situation, there's nothing wrong with sucking it up. That is called resiliency. That is building into one's ability to overcome simple little adversities in life. And if we can't do that, you know, we're going to go down a really negative pathway.
Yeah, you're bringing a lot of other questions that maybe we won't get to today.
No worries.
That's good. Yeah, I'll have some more on that kind of stuff. So sure. I appreciate that. That's good. How about you, Satya?
Yeah, interesting. Very much appreciate hearing what all three of you have expressed so far. I if someone needs to cry, for the most part, I think you know, suppression's not helpful. So that, but the crying is a response to how one's mind is reacting to a situation. So it kind of happens along a continuum. There's a relative, I think a lot of, and forgive me if I'm misreading the situation, but I think, you know, part of what Ted was saying was being able to recognize that emotion. And then I think Donnie's situation is, you know, one should not become crippled by a situation. You should have the mental stamina, and the mind is so delicate. And this is a big thing that in the yogic platform of how we keep psychic composure. And the mind is not static. It's constantly undergoing change. We have the perpetual ability to strengthen the mind. And that generally comes from, you know, having some great, you know, North Star in your life that can give you some type of guidance amidst all the, like I was expressing earlier, the comings and goings of life. It can be overwhelming of the things we don't have control over, and the losses that invariably occur. Toys break, school comes to an end, and you move into a new sphere of life. It's constant transformation. And the more that we're able to steady the mind on something, some type of greater goal, then that gives a certain basic psychic stability to manage all the ins and outs of life. And if tears come along the way, that's fine. But, you know, so it's really what made someone cry 5 years ago may not make someone cry today. And that may not be because they're suppressing something. It may be because they've overcome the anxiety associated with that prior pain. So it's a complex topic, but I don't believe that, you know, people should feel repressed or suppressed and feel like they can't express those tears. Express it. And then at the same time, we should be in a perpetual mode of strengthening our inner core, and regardless of how old we are. And, you know, spirituality, those types of big questions, when we face those, I think it gives a lot of strength. And that gives us the ability to address a situation, with our best, with our best foot forward. So, I don't think anybody should be, pushed aside or labeled for crying. And crying also takes a certain amount of courage to say, hey, you know, that hurt, you know, that was painful stuff. It's the long, as we can pick, get linked with some type of great North Star in our life. I just think that just, it's really, really helpful. I'll leave it at that, I suppose, on that offering.
Everyone's brought a good perspective, and it's caused me to zoom out as I'm listening and think, well, really, it's my question's about crying or a specific response to an emotion, but that's more broadly what it's about, which is expressing emotion, right? Because there can be tears of joy as easily as there can be tears of rage or tears of sadness. And again, I'll go back to it. I'm bad at crying. If I'm joyful and I'm feeling that welling up, there's something in me that, you know, pulls it back in. And I know when it's happening, I'm like, ah, you're not going to cry, are you? You're going to pull it back in. So I'm always curious how to better release that emotion and connect head to heart. I'm uber logical person. Lisa's all heart and I'm all head. And it's like, pairs nicely, but it also creates some challenges sometimes. So I'm always looking to connect the two better. And I think it's important as men, right, that we're always trying to do that, because that in many ways is what prevents violence. It prevents altercation and escalation, and it can move us forward when we do that, I believe. I really can't underemphasize how important it is to be able to express that emotion and sure. feel comfortable and allow your friends, right? How many times have you been in a group of friends and one of them's getting emotional and everyone else starts teasing them, right? To suppress it. I think that's part of what it is that we're dealing with. And we have to always be mindful of and supportive as men. So it's something I think we'll talk more about in the future too. Now, like, we talked warrior, we talked wounds, grief, crying and emotion, expressing emotion. How about going into battle? And how do you mentally prepare for battle, knowing that we're in a much different age when it comes to the how a battle is fought or what battles we face versus decades, centuries ago? How do you prepare yourself emotionally, physically, spiritually for the battles that you have in your life? Let me start with Ted.
Let's see. I'll go back to my therapist days again. I would run maybe 10 therapy groups a week with felony sex offenders, most of whom didn't want to do the work I was asking them to do. So, yeah, you could say every day was a battle. But because I was very serious about the work, because I genuinely loved it, I would get those butterflies before group every day, but I learned to really like those butterflies because I knew, hey, I can make great things happen with this nervous energy. You know, and I looked forward to that nervous energy, quite frankly, for years and years. And then after when I left that, I missed it when it was gone. But I think knowing what you want to do, knowing what you're capable of, and knowing what kind of mark you want to leave on the world, that's what gets you through those battles. Now, if you want to be here to help other people, I think that's definitely a higher cause that all of us are very much focused on. That in and of itself can help you handle that battle. know, your purpose is solid. You're here to help other people. You will get through this because it's important work that you're doing. The cause will get you through it, in other words.
Yeah. Yeah. Service mentality helps to keep you focused on.
Yeah. So if the one guy in the corner doesn't like what I'm saying, I don't care. I've got seven other guys in there that will actually listen and benefit from that. And typically it's a hostile audience, but if you can win one or two guys over a month, you'll have everybody on your side and everybody's doing good work, community safer. And that's really how we looked at it for years and years.
Interesting. Satya.
Yeah, interesting. The nature of the battle has changed over the decades and centuries, and even of course naturally of my own half century on this planet. But right now, I think we're seeing a great battle of ideas. It's in the psychic realm of more so, and there was a great warrior back in the day known as Judas Deer, and he was one of those who know the Bhagavad Gita and the Mahabharata. But he was victorious in battle, and his name meant the one who maintains equipoise in the face of battle. And once we lose our equipoise, there's a lot of wasted energy, physical energy, emotional energy, and we're unable to really tap into spiritual energy at that point. So I think the initial question was how to prepare for battle. And just to know what the fight is about, you should be able to identify what it is about. What is the goal? And what is it that you're fighting for? Are you on the right side? Are you really clear-minded? And the more clear-minded you are, and the more that this is really central to your existence, then the battle is it's winnable. It's very winnable, and you won't stumble in the early marches of the fight if it's a long war and the early battles don't go on your way. You'll be undeterred. So I really think that clarity of what is it that you're battling? Is it something petty? Is it just something selfish? Is it something that should not even be fought? Are we just battling over materialistic things, just where there's really no victor, both are losers because you're just fighting for your own selfishness? Or is, in which case the fight should just be let go of, just get a greater sense of oneself? Or is there really something at stake, something meaningful, something moral, something, the welfare of something? Then that fight should be, and you should amp up all your ammunition and know that this is not about your little victory, but about some greater cause. And then you'll get tremendous energy for that, I find. That if the fight is something meaningful, and don't give in to anger, always look for some greater meaning in it, and it'll be self-perpetuating. The yogis say that fight you'll never lose energy on. You'll never get frustrated. You'll never lose energy, but it will carry through the whole way. And so that's the way I look at it. And we all have our battles in life, but you want to identify them. Yeah.
Thank you. Donnie, how do you prepare for battle?
So I have, different definitions of what, battle would be for the most part. So for example, serving in the military and preparing for battle, struggle, conflict, whatever you want to, specifically call it. Yes, there's training and there's hours of dedication to, getting ready. But I can tell you there is no real way to prepare for battle. What you need to do is be the one who is receptive to whatever's put in front of you. Because the first thing that dies in any situation, in any battle, in any conflict, is your plan. You might go in with 10 men and you walk through one door, one guy trips and falls, and your plan is no more. So in order to fight a battle or a war, you must be responsive to that immediate second. You must be responsive to what is in front of you. Yes, you can be trained. You can be supplied with the right food and ammo and radios and communications in that capacity. But pretty much the first thing that is going to go to the wayside will be your plan. And those are my personal experiences, and those have translated into the battles and struggles that I have, you know, faced today. And what it really boils down to is only knowing, again, I say it, I live by it, is that my response is the thing that I can control. So in the battle, in that struggle, whatever is given to me, my response is the only thing that I can really project to them. It can be negative. It can be positive. If someone comes at me with a great deal of aggression, someone who has been in many a battles in all walks of life, I know I can de-escalate. There's no reason to, for us to engage in this sort of, you know, rhetoric back and forth. I don't think that we can have an answer to what is an innate practice in all of us: conflict, man versus man, man versus nature, man versus, and you know, himself in the spiritual realm. There's so much conflict that we can be exposed to it and we can kind of learn from it, but through those experiences and those learnings allows us to react when a new battle, so to speak, is put in front of us. And I know for me personally, I know that I can react accordingly to, one, you know, preserve my own life, preserve my kids' lives in that capacity, whether it's purchasing the right foods, because the battle might be health, driving in a car, you know, making sure they're safe and secure. Driving in a car is a battle. Everything can be essentially a battle, and you can plan and plan and plan, but sometimes it's just not going to work for you. The first thing that dies in any combat situation is your plan. Hands down, hands down. So yeah, take it for what it's worth. Be responsive, be adaptive, and be ready to take all of your past experiences, pull them up in a second, and respond and react. And that's called instinct. That's called learning. That's called that innate desire and want to, you know, be responsive in the most accurate and timely manner. But battle's got a lot of definitions.
Yeah. You're reminding me of the phrase mind like water, right? Yeah. Absorb what it is and let it's going to have an effect, and you absorb it and take it in and then process and proceed. Interesting.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of metaphor to that. You know what I mean? I've heard the saying, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. I'm sure we've all come across different sayings like that, but I believe the warrior who is in that garden has a lot of experiences. He's built in his resiliency. He's learned from people older as well as younger to be ready for whatever comes his way in that garden to protect himself, protect his family, to be that true divine masculine role of courageous and leadership, and more importantly, being vulnerable. That's really what that warrior in that garden is doing.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing.
My pleasure.
So we're coming up. I have a bunch more questions, but I'm going to keep them for another opportunity for us to talk.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been, again, you guys drop all sorts of wisdom and knowledge, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do is just take an opportunity. If you guys have anything that's going on that you want to share, so you know, let the audience know what you're up to. I'd like to take that opportunity. I know Lisa would like me to continue working on the masculine or the male side of Buddhist Biohacker, since it's probably, I guess, 10 months almost now that it's been going, and Lisa's got all sorts of content. It's very female and feminine oriented, not exclusively, but I'll be doing more of this kind of stuff. So I look forward to having you guys ongoing.
Awesome.
And let me ask Ted if you have anything to share with the audience.
Just real quick, guys, my website is audaciousgrowthcoaching.com, and I have both individual and group options. And if you have any questions for me, please hit me up.
Excellent. Satya.
It's a pleasure to be honest, to get the opportunity to share and communicate with others. And I think you and Lisa have created a wonderful platform that I've been able to engage with quite a bit over this. It's been one of the bright spots of what this, whatever you want to call it, pandemic or in new mode of living that we're all dealing with. So I applaud all your efforts, and it's been an honor to be included in a lot of these seminars and forums and classes and things. So that's been great. For those who'd like to reach me, Renaissance Yoga or Ren Yoga, and I'm on various platforms that way, and have classes, digital classes, live classes, on-demand classes. But I look forward to participating with future endeavors and continuing to explore meaningful questions and hearing what others people have to say and their perspectives on these issues. Yeah, great. But wonderful to be here with everyone as always.
Awesome. Yes. Donnie, you got anything?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure. Each one of you are, very unique in what you offer, your perspectives, your outlooks. And I find a great value in that as a man. One, I think it's important for us to leverage each other's knowledge, skills, and abilities, reinforce kind of that idea of leading by example. And I think every one of us are doing that right here. So my hat goes off to you. My hair's a little, I didn't plan that at all, but, in the world of Donnie, I'm still going out in the bush quite a bit. I had a TV show come out on his channel this past weekend where people can catch me living in a swamp for 30 days with no tools, just the clothes on my back and a one-head animal. That was all they gave me. So that's kind of fun and exciting. Again, that's on the History Channel. And starting next spring, I'm going to be running some men's seminars in the great state of Colorado. And I'm excited because as I'm, formulating a lot of these things in the back of my mind and kind of working on some of my approaches and my angles, I'm gaining a lot of information and knowledge from you guys. And I'd like to continue to leverage that. So then I can really provide a whole kind of different approach for, older men and younger men that have gone through all sorts of traumas in their lives and great experiences in their lives that we can all kind of come together and work on our mental, physical, emotional, but more importantly, our primal health and, kind of live wild once again. So those will be coming out pretty soon. You can check it all out on, DonnieDust.com and then all the social media outlets. I'm on there as well. So feel free to reach out. I'm very responsive. And I love chatting with people, talking with people. So yeah, once again, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is have a closing story from Satyam. I believe you were notified in advance that I was going to ask. And you might have something to share. Another final nugget of wisdom as we're signing off here.
Sure. Let's see what we can do here. There's a mom and a little boy. And she used to ask him, "What's the most important body part? What's your most important body part?" And the boy was young. He would say, "Mama, my most important body part are my legs because I can run very, very fast." And he was a fast runner. And time would go and she'd say, "What's your most important body part?" As he was older, he became quite an athlete. And he'd say, "Mama, my arms, my strength in the arms, that's my most important body part." And he went off and he became quite the mathematician in school, in college. And, he'd come home and she'd say, "What's your most important body part?" And he'd say, "Mom, it's my brain. I can untangle the greatest equations there are in the field of mathematics with my brain. And sure enough, he goes off, he gets married, he has his own family, and tragedy strikes and all the generations of the family come together. And he sees his mom, and she's clearly affected, and they just do a nice embrace, and she kind of rests on him a little bit. And she says, you know, I'm so glad that I raised a son who truly understood what the most important body part is, as she rested her head on his shoulder. And he understood, yes, that the shoulder is the most important body part, because it's that way we can help those and support those in need in all different ways, and to let people know that that it's not that a lot of our manhood and our masculinity is our ability to help and shoulder those who need support along the way in the journey. So it's the shoulder.
Awesome.
Very nice.
Gentlemen, we'll do this again. We'll be in touch. I have all sorts of other things to talk about, so there's no shortage of opportunity to meet up again. And until next time, stay safe, stay strong.
Will do.
I'll take care of yourselves. And I appreciate your time and your wisdom, as always.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you again.
All right.
Wonderful to be with everyone.
Well.
Okay, stay well, yeah.
See you.